Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 today with Hal and Alan. In today's program, we chat with an Indonesian woman who planned a dance career. She began studying dance in the United States before a serious accident that voided that career option. She then endured a dark year following that tragedy, but then decided to migrate to a music career instead beginning with 5 years of music study here in Australia. She now teaches and performs here in Melbourne. So, as usual, another interesting chat coming up here on Orange Ribbon today, so please stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. Orange Ribbon. Welcome to Orange Ribbon today with Hao and Ellen. Hello, Hao. You were a little bit breathless before. Were you running late or something?
Possibly. Maybe.
Yes, I didn't know what to do there because you were a little bit out of breath having just rushed into the studio.
It's like running down the CBD on a nice warm Saturday.
This is an interesting experience, but anyway, this is our program now. Orange Ribbon and Joy's multicultural program, which used to be heard on Wednesday evenings and which has now migrated to Saturday afternoons. Before we introduce today's guest, just to let listeners know, because a couple of people do know me, have been listening to me for a few years, I've been doing Orange Ribbon for 11 years now, and I've decided to take a long break. So this afternoon will be my last program for a long while. I plan to take a very long break away from Orange Ribbon, and you might hear me on a few one-offs occasionally, but I'm taking a little bit of break. So just to put that out on the table, so Hugh will be back in the country tomorrow, and he will be on air next week, although it actually will be a pre-recorded interview that he and I did before he went away. But anyway, that's another thing. Now, today's guest is a lady called Carolyn, and she comes from Indonesia. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Now, you
selected all of the music today. In fact, I think, except for that first track, which we'll talk about in a moment, all the other rest of the music is actually played by yourself because you are a musician. First off, that piece of music, you said off air that it was one of your favourite tracks. Why? What is it about that particular piece of music?
I really like his music.
Who is it, by the way?
His name is Krisya.
Is he a well-known Indonesian singer?
He's a big singer in Indonesia. He passed away 3 years ago.
So, oh, did he?
Yeah, but I've loved most of his song.
Uh-huh. Now, we've mentioned that you come from Indonesia. Specifically, whereabouts?
I'm from Jakarta.
From Jakarta. Okay, tell us a little bit about family history. So you are an only child or you have siblings?
I have one elder sister.
One elder sister. And the family structure, what's the ethnicities of your family? I mean, is it Malay or Chinese or whatever in your ethnicities?
Mum was Hong Kongese, but but she grew up in Jakarta. Mm-hmm. Dad was Indonesian with a Chinese background. But he looks like Indonesian, like local Indonesian.
What does that mean?
You'll know later on.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I suppose from, like, were you around during the Suharto regime and had to grow up in that sort of environment?
Yes.
What was it like? I mean, was it different? I mean, obviously Indonesia's changed dramatically in the last 10 or 15 years, but what was it like as a child growing up in that era?
Well, it didn't affect me that much, being Indonesian Chinese. Most of my friends are Indonesian Chinese. So it was pretty normal.
Yeah, it's like, I guess for me, because I have a fair few Indonesian Chinese friends myself, and I find one of the things that, because I'm also, and obviously, like, Vietnamese Chinese, and for me, being able to speak Chinese is something that I just assume everybody know. But a lot of my Indonesian Chinese friends, they actually don't know how to speak Chinese, and this has a lot to do with the political climate in which they grew up, where they are not allowed to speak Chinese. And so for me, that was always an interesting aspect of it, because for me, I've always, I mean, it's a silly kind of thinking, but, oh, if you're Chinese, you know how to speak to Chinese, but it's actually not very common for people in Indonesian, even Chinese Indonesian, to actually be able to speak Chinese.
Your mum was from Hong Kong, you said, which is primarily Cantonese speaking. Do you know any Cantonese or even Mandarin at all, or you didn't speak?
I speak Mandarin.
You do speak Mandarin?
Yes.
Oh, do you really? So how did that come about, given that your mum is Cantonese?
Mum went to a Chinese school in Indonesia where they learn Mandarin.
Ah.
So
actually, it's an interesting talking about sort of general things about Indonesia, because there was a period in time, 10 years ago, I think it was, I can't remember, when there was a lot of problems for local Chinese in Indonesia, where shops were being burnt and all sorts of things. I mean, were you impacted at all by that, or your family, or you were sort of hidden from a lot of that at the time?
I didn't get any effect from that, because probably we live in the central, and also because I don't look, you know, I don't look like an Indonesian Chinese.
Okay.
My dad was very dark, as mentioned before. Yeah. So, we didn't. I mean, like, we didn't get any. Yeah. Luckily.
So basically, you actually got the chance to attend Chinese school in Indonesia then?
Or? No, no. In my generation, we didn't have a Chinese school like my mom mom was going to this school. So I went to, a private school.
Yeah. So when did you actually start learning Chinese?
Oh, actually, mom put me in a, you know, Mandarin lesson, which I'm not really...
Oh, so it's very, hush-hush kind of...
Yes. Do this, do that.
Yeah,
you know.
What about from a religious point of view? Was your family religious at all, or did you have a religious upbringing, or not so?
Yes, I do actually. My dad actually was a priest.
Was he?
Yes. So we had these Sunday schools, blah blah blah. You know.
As in a Christian minister or a Taoist or?
And Christian.
Christian.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay. What was it like as a young person growing up in Jakarta? Now, I guess most of us these days see the video images on TV, and Jakarta looks like a modern, just like another modern city. Now, I know that's the city area itself and the suburbs, and some of the suburbs, obviously, there's a lot of poverty. But as a child, how was it for you growing up in Jakarta? Did it seem pretty normal to you? Did you have a middle class or lower class, upper class upbringing?
I'm from a middle class upbringing family. It's pretty normal.
So you had a pretty sheltered life, going to just do a very middle class kind of living, and you know, going to school, and so do you have like servants?
I do actually.
That's some of the things that various people that we've interviewed.
And we have a driver as well.
from Malaysia as well. There's quite a few come here.
I think the term middle class is a little bit different.
We understand as middle class. It's interesting, because you come to a place like Australia where it's extremely rare.
Rare. At least I have one here.
So, well, we'll talk about Australia and the changes to the whole lifestyle, I suppose, when you move to Australia. But tell us a little bit about Jakarta. I mean, in rough figures, what's the population? Do you know?
Oh, I didn't expect.
Am I asking too many questions?
No. Probably 20 million.
I don't think it would be. Would it be 20 million?
I don't know.
Anyway, it doesn't.
Indonesia is supposed to be the most populous Muslim country in the world. So
that's right. Yeah, but I'm not sure that. Let's move on.
If any listeners?
So did you travel around Indonesia much as a child, or did you primarily spend your life around Jakarta?
I did travel overseas occasionally with my family. I actually didn't get around to travel around Indonesia at all.
See, I think that's very common, because like. When friends of mine go to Vietnam and they travel to all these places, and then they come back and they start listing these places, and then they ask me, "Oh, have you been there?" And I said, "No, I've just stayed in Ho Chi Minh City, and that's it." And it's like, you know, I've traveled around the world a lot, but not much in
Vietnam.
No, and I think it's that urban culture, isn't it?
Yes.
That upbringing that we have, that you actually you don't get out of the city very often.
I know.
Anyway, let's take a break, and we're speaking to Carolyn, who's our guest on the program today, who, as we'll find out a little bit later, is, amongst various other skills that she has, is a musician and a pianist. And we've got a rather long piece here that you wanted to be able to play today. And what is this piece of music that we're going to play?
Oh, this is Chopin in B minor. It's a nocturne.
And it's played by Carolyn.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Ari Tribben, you're with Hal and Alan, and that was a piece of music, Schumann, I think. Who did you say
Chopin.
Chopin, sorry.
Your memory's going, Alan.
Yeah, sorry about that. It was played by our guest on today's program, Carolyn, who originally comes from Indonesia. Now, obviously, we've proven already as a result of that music is a part of your life, but you started out also with dance. When and how did dance start with you? At what age and how did it develop? I better turn you on.
Mom was a dancer. Well, not a dancer, probably. She knows how to dance. So she put me to the ballet lesson since I was little. That's how it started.
Yeah. So are you a classically trained dancer then, or a modern dancer?
A classical trained...
Oh, sorry, modern. I mean contemporary.
That's okay.
Dancer.
That's
I'm
okay.
Mixing my dance terms up.
So now you went to the US at one stage, I think, later on in what, your late teenage years or whenever it was, for dance. Why the US and where did you go in the US?
Because I've been wanting to study dance in America. That's why.
Was it difficult to get into a dance school in America?
It depends which school that you're going. Some school, they just, you know, take whoever, and some school you have to do the audition.
Yeah.
Yes.
So where was the school that you end up in?
I went to a Gus Giordano Jazz Dance in Chicago.
Right.
It's a very, very good school.
And were you, where did you stay when you were there? Were you staying in student accommodation, or do you stay in private homes, or what was your accommodation when you were there?
I live in a studio apartment. It was just 3 blocks away from the school. So.
Okay.
Were you by yourself at
yes.
How old were you at this
No,
stage?
I was like 21.
Okay, so I was wrong when I said in your teenage years.
Yes.
It was a little bit later. So you were there for, I think, about 12 months, but then you had a rather unfortunate accident. Tell us about that.
I went back to Indonesia for a holiday and also to prepare a performance from where I came from, the dance school back to Indonesia. It was my very, very first rehearsal with them, and I injured my left knee.
But you say you injured your left knee, but that's putting it rather simplistically. It was a little bit more serious than that. You sort of had to look at options of medical surgery or whatever, and it was all very difficult.
Yes, it was really, really difficult for me. I don't know. I just know that I wouldn't be able to dance the same I did. And it's really hard for me to accept that. I went to all hospital in Jakarta, and I also went to Singapore for different opinion. And they basically say the same thing. You have to operate your knee, blah, 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 blah. And I couldn't make any decision because I thought that, you know, what's the point? You know, like doing a surgery, and you know, if I dance again, then chance I will injure my knee again. I just don't even want to think about that.
So that must have been obviously a very difficult period, because you had previously set your mind and your career goals, if you like, on this life as a dancer. So the period following that must have been very, very sad, very difficult for you. How did you cope with that?
Well, the difficult part was most of my friends, they are dancers.
Oh, dear.
So I do have a non-dancer friend, so I started go out, you know, with them. I mean, like, I couldn't even really go out. I was a bit limping. So, yeah.
So, did the recovery process take a long time?
Yes.
So even just for walking?
Yes, because I didn't operate my knee. I was limping for nearly a year.
Wow. So, what did you do in that year? Were you working at all, or were you training for something else, or were you trying to work out what you were going to do with the rest of your life? I mean, what was happening in that year?
The first half year, I didn't do anything. I was just, you know, like going from one hospital to the other hospital and, you know, like hoping for the best.
Yeah, so basically, you keep hoping that the next doctor you see will give you a better opinion.
Yes.
or a better solution or something, so
yes.
you keep doing that. So, in the end, did you actually have that operation on your knee?
No, I didn't. I remember it's around mid-year. I just told my mom, after I went back from Singapore, I just told my mom, Mom, can I do a piano course? And she said, okay.
Just want to call back. Does that you said that you've got quite a few friends who are dancers. After you make the decision to play the piano, do you still keep in contact with the friends that
yes.
are dancers?
Yes, very much.
Is it painful for you to see them? I mean, are they all still dancers?
And yes. It's not painful at all because, I mean, like, it's very sad for me that I cannot dance, but, I mean, I can't really... I didn't remember being sad watching them dancing.
Okay.
You know, because...
Yeah. This is Orin Tribben. All right, we'll come back and talk a little bit further about how your music career advanced. You're with Howe and Alan, and our guest in the studio today is Carolyn.
Joy 94.9. Online all the time. joy.org.au.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Orin Tribben with Howe and Alan, and our guest in the studio this afternoon is Carolyn, who comes from Indonesia, and who played the previous two short tracks. What were they?
Oh, they're human. It's two pieces from Kinderszenen Opus 15 by Robert Schumann. So the first one was Catch Me If You Can. The second one was Happiness.
Changing the pace a little bit now and looking at life in Indonesia, what is it like for gays and lesbians in Indonesia? Have things changed over the years? And is it easier to be gay or lesbian in Indonesia these days?
I haven't been home for a while, so I'm pretty sure there are, you know, big scene over there.
Mm.
But I'm pretty sure that it's very discreet too.
Mm. I mean, I guess for me, I mean, I'll have to show my lack of knowledge here, but the only contact I've had with Indonesia, like the so-called the gay scene in Indonesia, is a film called Artisan. I think Artisan? It's the first film, in Indonesian film, that has a gay characters in it. And it was everything was very chaste and polite, and everything was just a slight suggestion to it. And it was sort of this really funny scene, and it's not even the gay couple, like the gay person on the show, but it was another couple who was trying to have a baby and they couldn't have a baby. But and then they show a sex scene, but the sex scene has the two, like the male and female, was kissing each other but hugging each other, and it was supposed to be a sex scene, except they're fully clothed. And I'm kind of sitting there watching this movie, and I'm thinking, the reason why you can't have a baby is because you know, you're not doing it right. But what I guess what I'm trying to say is that Indonesia, it seems to be a very conservative country, and is that what it is?
No, it's just, how to say this in... I guess, you know, we're a Muslim country, you know, like, so that sort of thing is, you know, like, it's forbidden, you know. So, but, I mean, there are lots of gay in Jakarta.
I mean, I've only been to Jakarta once, but I've been to Bali many, many times, and certainly a very vibrant gay scene in Bali. But harking back to what I was just saying, on television or in movies, for example, would there be a gay character in a movie or a TV series now, like, for example, we would have in Australia, or would that be extremely rare?
I don't think it will happen.
You don't think it not in, wouldn't it really?
Oh, well, who knows in 10 years' time, but no.
Yeah, okay. what about yourself? When did you realize that women might have been an interest?
It happened in the dance school. So that was long time ago. When I was 19 years old, I think.
so this is dance school back in Indonesia.
Yes.
So were there many women the same in dance school? Would that be common, or would there be very few women interested in women in a dance school?
I knew one or two, but, you know, not more than that.
What about being out with family? Has that been an issue for you?
Well, it's not an issue because my mom actually never asked me in person. A couple years ago, my former dance teacher told me that my mom came to her and asked about me. So that's how she found out.
Now, we're talking about Jakarta here, and obviously perhaps other some bigger cities, if you like, but in the rural areas of Indonesia, of which there are many, and the smaller islands and all that sort of thing, it must be much more difficult if you come from those places. Did you encounter any, for example, in the dance school, for example, that would have come from some of those smaller areas, and what sort of life would they have had?
I've never experienced anyone from a rural area.
I think we've been putting a bit like the fact that in a lot of Asian countries, and I would assume Indonesia is one of them, is the fact that people don't move around very much.
No.
So, like, if you were born and raised in a rural area, you pretty much stays there. And if you're in an urban area, you pretty much stays there as well. So.
Yes.
And I guess the only access that any gays or lesbians would have, even if they had that access, therefore would be the internet, would be about the only thing, because if they don't travel, and they certainly wouldn't have gay bars and lesbian bars and whatever in some of those smaller towns.
No.
So their only information they could get would be via the internet. So, getting back to you for a moment, so did it, when you realised that you had a woman interest, did it bother you at all, or were you perfectly comfortable with that at the time?
Never bothered me.
Never bothered you?
No.
Apart from the dance school, did you know any others outside of the dance school? Have any friends?
Not really. No.
No.
I mean, I guess your group of social friends are just the people that you meet in your dance school.
Yes.
And they usually are a little bit more liberal and progressive in their thinking as well, isn't it?
Of course.
Yeah, so
yes.
It makes it make your life a bit easier.
Of course. With thanks, Hal.
Anyway, let's take another break. This is Orange Ribbon with Hal and Alan, and our guest in the studio today is Carolyn from originally from Indonesia.
Joy 94.9, Gold Star Radio.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon with Howe and Alan, and that was a couple of tracks that were pieces that were played by our guest today, Carolyn. Tell us about those. That was the last one was a little bit more upbeat, and before that, I think was what you called track 5, wasn't it? I think something like that.
I think it has a better name than just track 5, Alan.
Well, that was two pieces from the Kindersinnen. Opus 15, again by Robert Schumann. The first one was Dreaming, the other one was Frightening.
Now, we spoke earlier about the accident, that dancing accident, which effectively changed the course of your life, if you like, and certainly career prospects and whatever, and you made the decision to move to music. Now, as a result of that, you ended up in Australia, I think, at VCA. Why Australia? And were there any other options that you considered at the time?
Yes. I chose Australia because it's way more affordable at that time.
Right.
And VCA and Melbourne, or had you considered other places in Australia as well?
No, I actually found VCA from the dance magazine. I had no idea what VCA School Music was about. It was only, I just sent a tape to VCA.
Right.
So what is that? Just for those uninitiated, what is the process if you want to get into VCA? You said you sent a tape, so obviously you've got to do some sort of audition even before you get in there.
Yes.
What about examinations?
You mean what was
the... Did you have to do any written theory at all before you...
No.
I guess if we can just take it one step back. So you actually had to, like, play a piece of piano music,
yes,
record it, send it to the VCA for them to judge.
Yes.
And then if they liked the piece on how you played it, then they call you back or they,
yes,
let you know. And then does that mean then you had to fly to Australia and have another interview, or based on just that CD or whichever tape that was enough for you to come and study in Australia?
Yes, I didn't have to come to play again, but basically it's just by correspondence.
So when did you first arrive in Melbourne then?
February 2003.
Okay, so you've been here 7 years, so you probably know Melbourne reasonably well now. Now, I think you told me in our pre-chat discussions that you had been to Australia before, if I remember rightly. Is that right?
Yes, twice.
Twice before. So therefore, you were sort of familiar with what you would be walking into as a lifestyle and all that sort of thing, living in Melbourne. But even that, being living here as opposed to visiting, if you like, as a tourist, were there some things that you surprised you or you found a little bit different when you actually got here and started living here, or was it more or less as you expected?
It's more or less I expected.
Okay. Now, you spent, I think you said, 5 years at VCA, which was split over, if I remember rightly, 1 year, 3 years, and 1 year, if I remember
correctly. Correct. You have a good memory.
tell us about how that split worked and what was involved in each of those three phases.
1 year foundation music course.
Foundation music course?
Yes.
Even if you'd had substantial music training before, or did that depend on where your skill level was or what?
Yes, it depends on, I think, yes, it depends.
If we go back, did that foundation course involve, like, learning English as well?
No.
Or was it just purely music foundation?
Excuse me. Yes, purely music and theory and,
Right, okay.
But I guess it's just trying to get everybody onto a standard level, I guess,
yes,
from wherever they came from before you went into the main course, I guess. Okay, so then you went into three years then, and what did you do during that 3 years? What sorts of things were you studying specifically?
Well, piano, of course, but we had, like, small ensemble, large ensemble. You can take modules as... French from musician, German from musician, language of music, harmony, collaboration with the other student, like dancer or...
Right. So, like, is there, like, for the examination process, is that, like, a lot of, like, judging involving, like, you know, you have to play a very difficult piece
and they kind of judge you
based on how well you play that piece?
Yes.
What about, you mentioned groups before. I mean, how big... an ensemble would you be playing with during VCA? They get to the size of being able to have a small orchestra, or they didn't quite have those sorts of numbers?
No, we do have our VCA orchestra.
Oh, is there?
Yes.
Alan, I think you should visit the VCA again soon, because if you... Okay, this is probably just a plug or something. But what I'm saying is that the VCA too recently has built a very large theatre out there, and there's a lot of productions that goes on out there.
I'm not a VCA expert, so I'm asking the question.
So that's what I wanted to, for any of our listeners.
Do you enjoy playing in larger groups like that, ensembles, or do you prefer to play alone?
I prefer to play alone or just with one musician, one instrument.
If you're playing with a piano, what would you normally have as an accompaniment?
Singer and...
Okay. A voice or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And after the 3 years, you then did another year.
Yes, I did honours for a year.
Honours. And it means that if you came here in 2003, I think... No, when did you... 2003,
yes.
Was it? So that means 2008. So that means at the end of... 2 years ago, you then are out to do what?
I teach in two different music schools. I perform regularly in Melbourne City.
Mm-hmm. What sort of... jumping back just a little bit, we've been playing your music this afternoon, which is all classical music. Are you a pure classical pianist, or do you play some more popular... pieces as well?
I do play popular music.
Now, I think you mentioned there's a couple of clubs and whatever that you've played at. Now, one presumes, would you normally play classical at those sorts of events, or would it be a mixture or more popular?
Usually it's a mixture. It depends on the client.
Basically you take requests.
Yes.
So,
not requests from
the paying client,
Yes.
Where to from here for you? I understand that you're applying for permanent residency and there's a bit of a process involved in that. Where are you at in that regard at the moment?
Well, because I have got not enough point for my, application, so I have to move to the countryside and live there for 2 years, but before that I have to find an employer. Basically I just need to work anything that related to my music degree for 2 years, and then I can come back to Melbourne and get my residency.
By an employer, in your case, that would mean what? Some music school or
yes.
a college or
Correct.
University or something that's got a campus outside
yes.
outside Melbourne. What are the possibilities in terms of where you might go?
I guess we're trying to see. It's not if there's a country pub somewhere that needs a pianist
yeah.
that plays every single night. It's not something like that.
No, we're talking something a little bit more serious
yeah.
than that.
Yeah.
But I think Ballarat was one of those that was on your horizon.
Yes.
Have you been to Ballarat before?
I haven't been to Ballarat.
Oh, you haven't been to Ballarat? Oh, nice little city, Ballarat. Can be cold in the winter, though. In fact, I think they might even have the occasional little bit of snow sometimes on the ground.
Don't scare her, Alan.
But it's
Ballarat is a very nice town.
Hmm.
It's a larger city than it's not too small. It's a regional
centre. I wouldn't mind.
So, other than music, what are your other interests? Have you got any other hobbies outside of music, or do you is really your life revolve these days around music?
I think I don't have any other interests. I like hanging out with my friend, but most of my good friends are in VCA. I still practice at VCA. I'm still having a lesson every fortnight with my piano teacher. I just want to perform more.
So you basically live through music.
Well, I go out for dinner, of course, but I don't really go out much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather learn something new, you know.
So music is your life, basically.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned a lot there, VCA. Do you know, does VCA have campuses outside of Melbourne, do you know?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I was just sort of wondering whether there was a possibility, if there were outside of Melbourne, maybe there was a possibility of you being able to get teaching role at one of the...
No.
Well, that's a pity. So, now, if you get Australian residency, which is what you're hoping for, then obviously you're going to continue to stay in Australia. But if for some reason that doesn't happen... what would you do? Go back to Indonesia, or would you look at maybe trying to migrate somewhere else? Or maybe we're looking at, we're assuming here, I guess, that you'll probably get your residency in due course here anyway, but would there be an option? Would you go back to Indonesia if you had to, or would you go somewhere else?
I would not go back to Indonesia. I'd probably go somewhere else, but I haven't thought about it. No, because I'm hoping that I can stay here.
Well, we certainly hope you can as well. Well, okay, maybe we just call it quits there because we're running a little bit out of time. So thanks very much, Caroline, for
coming and having
a chat to us. That very much appreciated. And all the very best in your music career in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming in. And that's Orange Ribbon for another week. And just recapping... this is my last program on Orange Ribbon for a very long time. So to all the people who have been regular listeners to Orange Ribbon over many years, thanks very much for supporting us since the program started in 1998. Thanks to Adrian on reception for helping out on program support this afternoon. Coming up next on Joy is the Women's Zone with Kaz, so stay tuned for that. That's the final program from me.
And I'd like to say thank you to Alan for being on the show for the last 11 years.
Well, thank you very much, Hal. But Orange Ribbon won't stop. It will continue. We'll be back again at the same time, 2 o'clock next Saturday afternoon. So that's it from us for today, 2 o'clock next Saturday. I'm Alan Smales, and for my very last time, bye-bye for now.
See you, everyone.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.